דניאל פרק ראשון. בשנת שלוש למלכות יהויקים מלך יהודה, בעד נבוכדנצר מלך בבל ירושלים, ויצר עליה. And so this is now the closest that we get to a direct continuation from the end of Melachim. And this is basically a little bit of a flashback. The end of Melachim, of course, we're already over a decade past these events. Perhaps more, it depends on how it is that we understand this date, as we'll discuss in a moment. And we've already reached the point at which there was the complete dissolution of the Malchut, and everyone was brought into Galut, Cheresh HaMasger, years earlier. And this is actually even before that. So it's a flashback to the closing years of the Maluch. And you'll remember that after the attempt at Yoshiyahu to restore Am Yisrael with all of his massive movement of the Shuva, Zakira, Avodah Zarah, and so on, nothing really helped because everything was so profoundly ingrained that people were willing to go along with him, but only on the surface. And there was no way to save Yehuda, as the Pasuk says. And so the last years were the years that were very, very rapidly declining, and we had what happened was after his death, the people on their own had Ahaziah. He lasted a very short time because Paro Necho came up and he was the one that was expanding his Malchut. Nebuchadnezzar was still not on the world stage. And he took him, threw him out of the Malchus, got rid of him, and appointed his son to be the Melech. And that is who we're talking about over here, because his name was originally Eliakim. Now, Paro Necho changed the name of Eliakim, if you recall, to Yehoyakim. And this was part of the way in which they would assert their own power over the Malucha, by defining the name the way that they wanted it. He became now enslaved, so to speak, as a tribute giver to Paro Necho. And then, subsequently, Nebuchadnezzar comes, and Nebuchadnezzar takes over the entire area, beats Paro Necho, and this is the Battle of Carchemish. He wins everything, comes over to Mitzrayim, destroys really the Imperium, and now Bavel is expanding all around the world. Now, how exactly to deal with the dates over here isn't clear, because it says over here in the third year of Malchut Yehoyakim, and it's mashma, that this was the end of Malchut Yehoyakim. The problem is, of course, that back in Melachim, we have the dating of, that this is in the Perek Chav Dalet, what happens over here is, Ben 25 Shana Yehoyakim B'Malcho, Ve'achat Esrei Shana Malach B'Yerushalayim. So he had actually been king for 11 years. So the story as it appears here, that this is the invasion in the third year of Malchut Yehoyakim, in which Yehoyakim is destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, doesn't make sense according to the Pashtut to the Pasuk. What exactly would it mean? And here we find Biyamav Allah, back in Malachim, Biyamav Allah Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, that during his period, Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel in fact had come to power and had taken over. Vayilo Yehoyakim Eved Shalosh Shanim, for 3 years he was indeed a tribute to Nebuchadnezzar. And then Vayoshev Vayimrodbo, he started to rebel against him, thinking now that the Bnei Bava would be involved in their own wars all the way up to the north. So how exactly do we learn this? So there's a number of different approaches. The Seder Elam's approach, which is the way the Gemara takes it in analyzing all of the psukim to try to work Achashverosh into this story, exactly when did he come in and so on. So the date that's given in Yirmiyo is B'shana haridi'it lo yakim ben Yoshio melech Yehuda. Hi hashana harishona Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel. Now this sure doesn't make sense, because if Nebuchadnezzar was king only in the fourth year of Yehoyakim, that was the first year in his reign, he couldn't possibly come up in the third year to attack Yehoyakim, because he wasn't even there yet. He wasn't even Melech yet. And then, the only way that we can understand the Bishnat Shalosh Lemalcho would mean Bishnat Shalosh of the Merida against Nebuchadnezzar. And that's a possibility. In other words, in the third year of his independent reign, during the time in which he was independent, because he was now out from under the hands of Paro Necho and out of the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. So that would tie into the Pasuk we just read in Malachim, that he was Moreid Bo Shalosh Shanim. Ubishana Shalosh, meaning the third year of the Merida, which was the Shnat Malcho, it was then that Nebuchadnezzar wouldn't put up with this anymore, and came, took over Yerushalayim, and as we'll see, took along with him some of the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, and some of the kids from Yerushalayim. That's how this whole book begins. So it turns out, therefore, as the Gemara says, the first year of Nebuchadnezzar was busy in the fighting with Ashur. He conquered Nineveh. In the second second year, he went and conquered Jehoiakim. 3 years Jehoiakim was Ovid him. 3 years he was married him. And that turns out to be the 11th year of Jehoiakim, because Nebuchadnezzar only started out in the 4th year of Jehoiakim. Took a year in the conquest of Nineveh. He was in his 5th year already. And so this was 6 years later. This is now the 11th year of Jehoiakim, which ties into exactly what it says in the Pasuk of Melachim, that he was king for 11 years. And that would be one approach. And the other approach is taken by the Ibn Ezra and a number of the other Rishonim, that there was really a separate, this is referring to the initial attack of Nebuchadnezzar after he took him out from the hands of Har-Nechal, and it was not the final destruction of Jehoiakim, even though it sounds like it. And they trace this to the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu that implies that Jehoiakim was in Babel and was brought back from Babel. If that was the case, then it could be that there was an earlier invasion, the details of which are given only, well, you can call them details, but one pasuk of details of which are given here, and didn't really register, except perhaps in the Megillah that Yirmiyahu wrote, which of course is Eicha, where there they were talking about how is it possible that Nochrim should have come into the Beit HaMikdash. Might have been a reference to this event, where they actually took Kalim out of the Beit HaMikdash. But one thing is clear, that this is the earliest description of the beginnings of the Galut. We know the details that the Gemara says about the Charashim Asger, that they were the leading citizens, the Sanhedrin, all of the people that everyone had relied on for political and spiritual and religious guidance. Those were the people that in the actual beginnings of the Galut, Galut Yehoiakim or Galut Yehoiachin, depending how you read the Gemara in Megillah, that was, as the Gemara says, a great chesed. A chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to be makdim the years to the Veno Shantem Ba'aretz, the Gematria of the Veno Shantem, and before the complete destruction of Yehuda, to send out the leading citizens. In Nebuchadnezzar's eyes, that was a way of completely breaking the back of the people, so that they would no longer dream of independence or of rebellion. And in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes, that was the immense chesed of allowing, before the influx of hundreds of thousands of refugees, in which everything would be buried by the needs, the physical needs of the arriving population, to give time for the setting up of institutions, a new way of treating various dinim that would allow survival even in the course of Galut. And this, of course, was a paradigm change of massive proportions. This we know from the story in Yecheskel, where they came and they spoke to Yecheskel and told Yecheskel, look, this business, it's clearly all over. I mean, this is like you're talking about God as if he still cares. You know, I mean, this is like a woman after divorce. And now you're coming to discuss the relationship. It's overs. I mean, if we were really still related, this couldn't possibly have happened. The thought of continuing without a Beit HaMikdash was simply inconceivable. This was a complete rejection. There was no basis left to any of the mitzvot. Not only the mitzvot, but also, as the Ramban points out, that all of the mitzvot are really not meant to be done in Chutz Laaretz. They're just there as hatzivi lach tzionim, a marshal to a melech who's thrown his wife out and thrown her back to home, and he says to her, well, in case we ever get together again, you should keep up the pretense of being a queen, so when you come back, you can still remember what it's like to be a queen. That's a marshal for, okay, so keep doing the mitzvahs of Chutz Laaretz as if they're meaningful, even though there's not really any place for them in Chutz Laaretz. It's the way people felt. There's no future for us. There's no meaning to anything that we're doing. And what's the point, they say to? And that, of course, is the Vias, where Kodesh Baruch comes back and says, get me to show me the divorce. You claim that we're divorced. And this was the underlying hidden basis of the growing change that would end up becoming a flowering such had never been in the entire course of Jewish history up until that point. As we've spoken about many times, if you take a look at Masechet Avot, the generation, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai and so on and so forth, nobody had anything to say about it until after this period. So through Shimon HaTzadik and the Shiori Anshei Knesset, and then all of a sudden people are saying things. And what happened to everybody's statements before? The whole flowering of Torah Shebaal Peh, the whole vision of how Yisrael could be part of a broader world. All of this was a creation of this book, of Daniel, and of the brief years afterwards of the period during Bavel, and this was, so to speak, the pre-Galut. And exactly the same thing, of course, happened in Mitzrayim. Yosef is sent down to Mitzrayim as a kid. He's called the Hayeled, Hayeled Einenu. And the whole idea of Yosef was his physical attractiveness, the way that he was able to present a face to the Umot HaOlam that was charismatic, that was exciting, that was youthful, that was sexy. This was all the idea that the Torah brings out in the nature of Yosef. And this is exactly what it is that Nebuchadnezzar wants, as we'll see. He wants that core, but he wants to make sure that before he gets a Yosef kind of character, that he will have them well trained in the ways of the Bavel. Of course, that would mean that he would hope to have them assimilated completely by the time his greater plans for the destruction of Yehuda and bringing the rest of the population up here would be put into effect. And just as by Yosef, we find that Yehuda shalach levanav lahorot, the charash and the masger indeed follow the coming of the Yosef with Daniel. And we'll see many, many similarities of Yosef and Daniel, not only in physical looks, but in the whole idea of the interpretation of dreams, of being forced to deal as a teenager with issues that are very, very difficult to deal with among the Umay Sa'ilam. There's the parallel of the Mitzrayim and Yosef and Bovel and Daniel and his friends is a very powerful parallel that obviously is meant to duplicate the sense of the Maisa Avasim Levonim. The issues that took place in Mitzrayim needed to take place here. The primal nature of the issues is, as Chazal point out, Bovel has an awful lot of tones that ring in our background because that's where we begun. We began back in Bovel and the entire history had begun there. And this was the Nimrod, who was going back, and it's therefore it's referred to here, Shinar, which is exactly the words. That's where Avram came from. And this is the dogma of, as the Gemara says, well, why Bavel of all places? Well, again, it's like somebody got married and is angry at his wife and sends her back to his mother, her mother. So your mother is Imchem, as it's identified, is to go back to Shinar, where you came from. And this is where Avram started out. This was the Lech Lecha. Go back to where you began, since you made such a mess of it. And let's see if you can do better this time. So that this is a reconstruction and a complete rebuilding of the nature of the paradigm of Yisrael from the start. And it's a massive, massive change, which, of course, is with us today. I mean, that's our learning, is Talmud Bavli. It's the events that the roots of which are here. And the original Takonos, the original Gezeres that were made in order to make it possible to survive among the Goyim, the Gemara goes back to Daniel. This is the question. It was Daniel who made the Gezerah against Shem and Akum, according to the Rambam. This was Bishal Akum. All of the things that he was careful to take upon himself became now a simon for what everyone was going to do in the course of generations. According to one man, Yom and the Gemara, it was actually direct takonas of Daniel. So that Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah was mevatel that takonah. That's the question. How could he have been mevatel that takonah of Daniel? Was it mekubal on everyone? Was it what Daniel had wanted to do? Was it a personal decision? Was it a decision that was meant to be a dugma for the rest of Klal Yisrael, but what is presented here is if it's some small personal story. It turns out to have an immense impact on history. We know the presence of Daniel throughout Malchus Bovel, Malchus Paras, and the way that he was active in the building of the Beis HaMikdash through the whole story of Esther and Mordechai and the Hasach. He's a major figure, and we meet him here as a kid. And so this is now either the 11th year of Malchut Yehoyakim, which is the third year of the independence of Yehoyakim, or this is indeed the third year of Yehoyakim after the Paro Necho period. Nebuchadnezzar now comes, and he puts Yerushalayim into a siege. Now we know that later on there was a siege of Yehoyakim, and Yehoyakim was intelligent enough and good enough of a human being to offer himself and his family up to the king of Bavel and just give up so that the city wasn't destroyed and so on. So here too, we don't find any impact of the siege in terms of the destruction of Yerushalayim or anything like that, but he certainly stamped the Gushpanka and the Malchus of Bavel over the Jews and taught them a lesson they wouldn't quickly forget, because Vayitein Adonai biyado et Yehoyakim melech Yehuda u'miktzat klei beit ha'elohim vayviyem eretz shinar beit Elohav. And so exactly as the story takes place back in Malachim, where Chizkiyahu had invited in the incipient Malchut Bavel, and that was the whole, he was so excited that the king of Bavel had found it so amazing, he had managed to escape Sancheiriv, and that the whole world was talking about this. Nobody else had so managed, and he shows him around, takes him into the Beit HaMikdash, shows him in Beit HaMikdash, brings him into the Otzorot HaMelech, and of course, he's immediately met by the Navi, who tells him, okay, beautiful idea, now all of these things will be taken to Melech Bavel, and your children will be sarisim in that same palace of the Melech Bavel that you are so excited to show him all of these things. But this same Melech Bavel, you'll note that the pasuk stresses is Vayiten Hashem biyado et Yehoyakim. And this is because, as Yirmiyahu defines Nebuchadnezzar, El Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel Avdi. He's called my servant. And I'm calling him my servant is to make it very clear. As the Gemara says, what was the Merkava doing coming from the Tzafon? Oh, says the Gemara, because God has had to go now and make Nebuchadnezzar, a total idiot, into a big king, because anybody who's going to be in a position of hurting Yisrael has to first be turned into someone harsher. So you take these idiots and you put them up there, like Hitler, Yamashim, a total idiot, a madman who in normal circumstances would be locked up in some psychotic ward. And he becomes a great king that everybody's following. Same thing happens in Nebuchadnezzar. The guy's a madman. If he literally becomes a madman in the course of this book, as we'll see, and was looked at as an absolute madman by all of the people that he managed to take over. And the whole world, as the Gemara describes it, was so excited when he finally dropped dead. But this is the guy that the Shekhinah was committed to making into a great leader of an empire in order that he should be able to be shalit on Israel. And so, he was an Eved. And as an Eved, of course, as the Medrash points out, if the Eved was the one who was Kena, the Jews, then obviously the Eved is only Kena for his master. His master's a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So nobody ever sent you out anywhere. This is just my Eved now. So now you don't have direct contact with me, so you'll have to go through this idiot. And this is the invasion that's mentioned now in Divrei Hayomim, that he takes Yoyakim, Vayasreel Benechushtayim, he puts it into handcuffs and foot cuffs and drags him away to Eretz Shinar, including some of the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash, and he brings them to Eretz Shinar Beit Elohav. Now that he was never told to do, so to speak, by Kodesh Baruch Hu. The only time we find this, where someone takes the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash and delivers it into the hands of an Avodah Zarah, of course, is the Plishtim. But the Plishtim took the Aron HaBrit, and they tried the same shtick. Oh, ho, ho. These Kalim, of course, that were taken over here, become the source of the destruction of Babel in the end. This is the handwriting on the wall, the Menah Menah Tekal Farsin. This is as the interpretation later on in the book explains, you took the Kalim, and now think that you're shalit on God. And so that was the end of Malchus Babel. That very night, they were destroyed when they had taken out the Kalim and attempted to drink. And this is the story with Ahasuerus, who again, the Kalim, Michalim, Shonim, are these Kalim? And Shonim, as the Gemara says, you're not doing this again. Boy, that's stupid. So and that, of course, led to the downfall of the whole story of Ahasuerus and so on. So what appears is a little line at the beginning of the book ends up being, just like the little boy at the beginning of the book, ends up becoming now extremely meaningful, just as the Lekich of the Aron HaBris becomes so important that now the gift that is sent back from the Plishtim with that Aron are central. They have to sit there in front of the Aron HaBris for all the years. Here too, these Kalim are going to, so to speak, find their way back to Yerushalayim, and we find indeed in Ezra a list of all of the Kalim, and every last one of them is brought back from Bavel, so that the Bavel turns out to have been Shomrim Ne'amanim against their will for that which was meant to be sent back by Koresh to the Beit HaMikdash. And that's the, as we'll see, that's the end, closing words of this parak, is the fact that Daniel makes it through till Koresh, and that's the end of that story. So it sort of jumps ahead in the parak to give you a historical perspective for a moment. This is going to go on until the first year of Koresh, yes, and that's the Balfour Declaration, the Koresh Declaration, and he comes back and brings those Kalim, and everything is great. Okay, so now he brings these Kalim into the house of his God, and then he also, now this could be referring to via the Aim, which is the Miktzat Klei Beit Elohim, together with Yoyakim Melech Yehudah. Presents, that's why Sadi Gon learns Elohav is not his God here, but rather his judges. In other words, he brings him to judge him for his rebellion. But the Kalim, that definitely, those Kalim, Hevi Beit Otzer Elohav, that he did bring, for sure, to the treasury of his God. And that's exactly what the Navi had predicted was going to happen, and had warned Chizkiyo that he's going to come, the same, very same Melech Bavel, obviously not the same human being, but the same Malchus above, it's like a Paro is always Paro, and is going to take these very things that you weren't Matsnia to his own country. Vayomar HaMelech L'Ashpenaz Rav Sarisaf. And so the king said to the Rav Sarisaf, now we've had the concept of the Rav, we have a Rav Achovel, Rav Beito that we have back even in the Chumash, Rav Sarisov, that always means the or Rav Atabachim we had.
So not only is he the leader of that group, the one who is in charge is the Rav. So Rishav obviously literally means eunuch. Very few understand that it means in the literal sense that these were castrated people. But in general, as the Gemara puts it, standing in the presence of a king is a castration, so to speak. In other words, you are unmanned. You're emasculated, exactly. Because you're not allowed to talk and you need to not show anything of... It's like the royal guards, you know, that the whole idea is they stand perfectly still, they're barely alive, then all of a sudden they start moving, you know, the tourists come and tickle their noses to see if they can get them to move. And that's basically, you have no right to a self, and in that sense you are emasculated. To the Rav Sarisav, that's what it means. The one who would be in charge of all the mumunim of the melech. And he told him, and appointed him, that he wants to make sure la'avi mibnei Yisrael u'mizera hamalucha u'min hapartamim. He wants him to bring from Bnei Yisrael. Now, this is a very strange thing because nobody was called Bnei Yisrael at this time. Bnei Yisrael was a way in which you referred to the Aseret HaShvatim. These were always called Bnei Yehuda, not Bnei Yisrael. And in fact, we actually have Nebuchadnezzar's own words on the subject. Here's some of the cuneiform tablets of Nebuchadnezzar describing the event herein. And the Munach of Yisrael is not the way that the land was referred to. It was always the Yehudai, Mamlechet Yehuda. So that it seems quite clear that what he was interested in doing was in fact taking over this idea of Yisrael. Not just to have Yehuda, the Malchut, be there, but rather, as was recognized, so to speak, the New Jerusalem is in England. The New Israelites is God's new church. All of this is the idea of the Goyim that seek in the identification of Israel something beyond the Jacob idea, beyond the Yehuda idea, some type of transcendent recognition that they have of the nature of Yisrael. And this is what he wanted. And then it should be Mizera HaMelucha, and indeed that was exactly what the Navi said was going to happen, that your children are going to end up being Sarisim in the palace of Bavel. There was specifically from the Zera HaMelucha, Umin HaPartamim. Now we know the Partamim we find in Megillat Esther all the time. It seems to be a Persian word, and indeed there is a Persian word called the Fratama. The Fratama, the ones who are the nobles, the highest level. Reb Sadia Gaon, most misunderstand, I think, Reb Sadia Gaon, in thinking that Reb Sadia Gaon is trying to give a Hebrew basis to Partamim, where in reality, he says Partamim means pre-Tamim, the finest fruits. But this is all that he's doing, in my humble opinion, is what Chazal always do when they import a word. They import a word that is clearly, they're not trying to pretend that it's a Hebrew word. They'll import a word and they'll give it a Hebrew basis so that it's absorbed naturally into the into the language. So it'll be kapandria. What does kapandria mean? It means instead of adamakifna, instead of going around this way, I'll go here. So it becomes kapandria, which of course is a Greek word. And dozens and dozens of terms like that. So why would the Navi include partamim here? Because it has a ring, it has a tzlil that allows you to relate it in its etymology. That doesn't mean that it literally came from that word, but you can relate it now to the word that would mean the same thing. The most beautiful fruits, the finest fruits, that would be the nobility of Yisrael. So he wants the Bnei Yisrael from the Zera HaMelucha, Mina Partamim. Some understand the Malbim include, understands these separate things. He wants a representation for Bnei Yisrael as a whole, from the Zera HaMelucha, from the Partamim. Most see this as getting more and more defined. Once you go to Bnei Yisrael, specifically the Zera HaMelucha, and then from absolutely the finest and the highest, not just anybody who's related to David. You know how many descendants he's got by now. I want somebody who's Mina Partamim. And what I want is Yeladim Asher Ein Behem Kol Mum. I want you to select kids that are absolutely perfect. The Gemara says, absolutely perfect means not even a mark from a vaccination. Nothing. There couldn't have been even Rubita de Kusilta. Rubita de Kusilta, they used to take blood. So that would leave off a mark on the arm if they would take blood or wherever they would take blood. They couldn't even have a Rubita de Kusilta. Absolutely perfect bodies. Vituvei mar'eh, beautiful looking. Umaskilin b'chol chochma. You'll notice, by the way, that there are six different issues that are mentioned over here. These are the six issues that Boaz was Merames to Rut when he said, and I'm giving you six Sa'orin, say Chazal, those are six Sa'orin because there were six children that you're going to have, each one of which is going to be defined in six different ways in the Torah. And this is some of them. We had the same thing by David himself. So David was also defined in a sextuplet, Yodan again, Gibor Chayel, Ish Milchaman, Avon Davar, Ishtar, Hashem Imo, and each one of those was, the last one was the challenge that threw Shaul off the running, and that's when he started being impossibly jealous of. So here too, there would be Tove Mar'eh, Ein Komu'um is one, Tove Mar'eh is two, Maskilim Bekol Chochma. Question what exactly that means. According to the Rambam and the Mora, Maskilim means natural intelligence. So as they had a natural intelligence in all kinds of different areas, according to Reb Sadia Gaon, it means Maskilim, that they had basic knowledge of all different areas of Chochma. They needed obviously more training and so on, but already had proven themselves at least to get a bachelor's degree. Something they had to be able to show that they could go ahead. And Yod'ei Da'at means that they had a level of wisdom, of attachment to what they were learning. According to the Ibn Ezra, that means that they could understand the import of what somebody was saying before he had to explain it to himself. Mivinei Mada, according to the Ibn Ezra, means, there's a lot of these very intelligent people who can't manage to put one word out of their brain on paper. These guys are Mivinei, allowing other people to understand what they're thinking about. Classic Ibn Ezra kind of comment. But everybody else learns Mivinei in the Lashon of they understand, not that they help others to understand. Mada, very interestingly, this is the first place this appears. We take Mada nowadays to mean science, but Mada, the only place it appears before is in Kohelet, Gam b'Mada Acha, Melech Al Tikalel, which means your own private things, your internal understanding. B'Mada Acha. So it would mean either esoteric issues or things that are very difficult for people to understand, hidden things. And it became afterwards a description of the underlying structure of science and so on, which is how we use it today. And that's Mada. So the Mivinei Mada is the fifth. And there, Vashekoch Bem Lamot Be'echal HaMelech, who also have the guts and the strength, as the Gemara says, stand means not to whisper, talk, giggle, or fall asleep, or need to sit down, or decide they have to run to the bathroom. No. So they have to have all of those kochot in order to be able to stand in the Heichal HaMelech. And having selected these kids, they are to be given a period in which to be taught Lelandam Sefer Lashon Kastim. So they are to be taught. Now, of course, Lashon Kastim is something that it's Akkadian as opposed to Aramit, which everybody knew. I mean, that was thought that everybody was talking Aramit. But Akkadit, now that's already very, very difficult. This is a uniform script. Would mean that they would have to become real Bekiyim. This was the equivalent of the Shakespearean language they would speak, not the language of the street. It wasn't the vulgar tongue. It was the tongue only of those who really understood, the Latin to the Italian, the Akkadit to the Aramit. And they would need to have 3 years of training in order to be able to achieve this, in order to be able to actually write in this language, which of course included all the cultural studies. So this was obviously an attempt at acculturation. He wants them to become, Yosef, of course, did exactly the same thing in Mitzrayim. He became more Mitzrayim than the Mitzrayim were. Well, he was hoping, and we'll see the changes of names, just like over there, Yosef, Yosef, not Taneach. The names here are also changed, and the king gets involved in this personally in providing them a stipend, teachers, dormitories, and especially food. They're very big on food. If they're going to get the right food, and they're going to get the right training, and they're going to be physically taken care of, mentally taken care of, won't have to worry about a thing for 3 years. At the end of 3 years, we'll test them and see if we get any quality people out of them. And so, Vayaman Lehem HaMelech, Devar Yom Biyomo, Mipatbag HaMelech. Now, Patbag should not, although some do confuse it with, as Rashi points out, they think that it's a Lashon of Hat. It is not really a Lashon of Pat. And the fact is that in ancient Persian, the word pitu meant meat, not bread. So it's a pat bag. Bag is chelek in Persian. So pat bag would be the portion that was given to them of the highest quality foods. Umiyein mishtav, from his own wine cellar. So that means he was giving them absolutely the best. Ulagad lam shanim shalosh, to give them 3 years of training, and this becomes on the Koran and Gemara, for Talmud shalom ra'ah, a brocha and his training in 3 years, he's not going to ever make it. If he can't do it in 3 years, then he can't do it. This is the whole story in the Gemara. When the Tanoim calls over his kids and says, look, you guys ain't getting anywhere. It's time to go to college. Let me just give you a little bit of advice. Don't get on drugs. It's fantastic, Gemara. This is all based on this idea that there's a time that's worthwhile giving as a trial to see how you can do, but you don't keep trying to beat things into people's heads beyond it. So Talmid Shlo Ra'ah Siman Yafeh L'Mishnato Shalosh Shanim Shuv Eino Ro'eh. And then Umiktzatam Ya'amdu Lifnei HaMelech. I will be lucky to get some of these kids to be able to actually make it up into some level of royal position. It's interesting. Reb Sadia Gaon learns Miktzatam doesn't mean some of them. Miktzatam means Miktzei Shalosh Shanim. At the end, Umiktzatam, at the end of these 3 years, then he's assuming all of them will be given position. And nobody else learns like that, but it's an interesting way of looking at it. Because Miktzatam keeps occurring over here. It's a very, for some reason, it's a recurrent word in Daniel. So to learn it in this particular place is Miktzatam, at the end of which, you know, where most of the time that's clearly not what it means. It's an interesting approach. And so indeed, from the Bnei Yehuda, there were four very special kids. Daniel, Hanania, Mishael, Va'azariah. Va'yasem layem sarah sarisim shemot. Even though it attributes now their new names to the sarah sarisim, we're going to see later on in the fifth parak that it was Nebuchadnezzar himself who was personally involved in the choice of these names. And he had actually picked out specifically Daniel from the beginning, as we'll see, because he identifies him later as being the one that he named after his own god, Baal. And this was the top of the gods in Bovel. And so these were going to be the king's fair-haired boys, basically. Yosef to Paro is Daniel to Nebuchadnezzar. And so the Sarah Zarisim is the one now who gives these names. Vayasem le Daniel. And so he calls, so this is obviously part of the acculturation process, not only just an act of Shlitah, but he's assuming that, you know, they'll forget their Jewish past. And so Vayasem, he now gives them these new names, and the name for Daniel is Belshazzar. This person is named after the god of Bava, that is Bel. Belshazzar means God should watch. So that's the Shomer, the Otzer, so he should watch over this treasure, so to speak. So that it's a very special name. Well, to Hanania they called Shadrach. Shadrach may also be a combination of the Merodach, which was one, that's the Mordechai name, which is also the name of a god in Bava. And Lemishael they called Meshach, which is interesting because Bavel, of course, is Sheshach. This is Mishael of Sheshach is Meshach. Strange. Nobody knows exactly what this was all about. Ula Azariah, he called Abednego, meaning the Eved of Nebo, possibly, which was another name, because Beis and Gimel switch very often in the Aramaic. That's Reb Sadia Gaon's interpretation. But they're all based around some element of their own culture in Bavel. And then Vayasem Daniel Alibo. And so he committed himself in his own heart. Of course, that phrase, Samtem et Advarim Elo Al Levavchem, Vayasem Al Libo, Simu Levavchem Al Darkechem. It means somebody who takes responsibility for his own development. Somebody who doesn't care. Imlota Simu Alev is the words in Malavi. If you don't take this to heart, which we say in English. So he took to heart, and the Gemara questions, is this Al Libo for himself, or is it Ali Yebo to be Gozer, and he caused this to become now the basis of the Takana of the Bishul Akum, Stam Yenam, Shemen Akum, which the Gemara discusses. That's a machlokes. But he decided right at the outset, when he was taken to Bavel, he's not going to be eating their food.
Are they taken yet?
Yes. They're there. And so Asher lo yidga'al, he doesn't want to make himself filthy. Bipatbag ha-melech v'yen mishtav, with the food of the king. And yen mishtav, of course, is also the lashon that the Torah uses for mixing with a goyim. You're going to drink their party wine, so to speak. Ve'vakesh misar ha-sarisim asher lo yidga'al. And so he goes as the chutzpah to ask the sar ha-sarisim. I mean, this could have cost him his life, understand? Because it's clearly an act of independence, of unwillingness to submit to something that the king himself had defined as what needed to be done in order to drag these kids into the whole sense that they're part of the overall. It's clear, we'll see later, that this was a dormitory of thousands of kids from all over the world that were being chosen for this. Every Malchus that Nebuchadnezzar had gone out, he brought the best and the top. And then this was the melting pot, so to speak. For someone to get up and to say, I don't want to be part of this, is outrageous. And what's fascinating is that Shlomo HaMelech, at the very moment that he was mechanech lebeit HaMikdash, had clearly foreseen something of the sort. Because we're going to see that in his tefillah, when he spoke about that, even when they will be taken away, and then they'll go into galut, but nonetheless, unetatam l'rachamim lifnei shoveihem, you will give them to find favor in Rachamim in the eyes of their captors. they will still turn to this place. And what's remarkable, the one who turns to this place is Daniel, who now in the next pasuk finds favor in the eyes of the Rav HaSarisim. And he's the one that opens up windows in his secret chambers that go facing Yerushalayim, and he davens every single tefillah facing Yerushalayim. This becomes now the way in which they try to get him. They have the secret police that discover that he's actually doing all of this in private after they made a gezeira against it, and as we'll see later on in the story. But that relates now the days of Koresh and the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash to the events that take place to Daniel right here at the very moment of the chinuch of the Beit HaMikdash itself. And so he asks the Sar HaSarisim and asks him not to accept. Asher lo yitkal, not to accept that root. Vayitein ha-Elohim et Daniel ha-chesed ul-rachamim lifnei Sar HaSarisim. Now here we have the other remez to Yosef. This is exactly what happened. He's in a position of utter nachut, in which people should be able to do whatever they want with him. And yet for some reason he ends up managing to get his way. So now, as Shlomo said, there will be such a time which will find rachamim lifnei shoveihem. So here the Sar HaSarisim is not willing to risk his own life to do this. But he's sympathetic. He's sympathetic to the cause and allows the thing to happen without getting personally involved. Now, Daniel, in asserting that he was not going to be Mitgael b'Pat HaMelech, we mentioned that Ramban learns that this was actually a gezeira against all Bishalaku. Not only that, the Gemara is referring to the question of what what was included in the gezeira about Shemen, which afterwards became Batel. Amazingly, the Medrash says that in this, he was running against HaKadosh Baruch Hu's own opinion, because Yecheskel had said, Kacha yuchlu b'nei Yisrael et lachmam, and called it Lechem Megoa, Lechem Tameh. And that was something that that was part of the gezeira, so that they're going to eat lachmam tamei bagoyim asher adicham sham, and that's the way it's going to be. Did Daniel say, well, that's his opinion. We're not makabel that gezeira on ourselves. And basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be menasah, to see whether, well, that's how it is. You have to accept the fact that it's all over, which was, of course, the das of those who came to discuss this with Daniel, with Yecheskel. And so they used the word nas, as we were saying, which is the nisayon. They said that the Medrash views as being an insight into the way they viewed themselves, sort of like a Freudian slip. You test us, as we'll see. But they saw this as a test. And when the Sar HaSarisim told them, well, you guys think that you're going to be able to handle this? Well, we come from a guy that was tested 10 times, and he managed. So maybe we'll be able to manage it. And you know what? We'll do our thing and let God do his thing. And if he sees that we're on the right path, maybe he'll change his mind. But there's no such thing as accepting a gezeira just because the Navi said that. Of course, that's very true. This was part of the Neo being from the Beit HaMelucha, because we already saw that that's exactly what Chizkiyo said to Yeshayahu when he came in and said, okay, you finished talking now? Thank you. You can leave. Bye. Because as far as I know, an Neviut that says that something terrible is going to happen doesn't have to happen. You do your job. You told me the Neviut. I'll do my job. You've done your job. You please see yourself to the door. Thank you very much. And that very much is the way they were responding to Yecheskel. You're telling us that we're going to be eating lechem tameh, and we say we are not going to be nitgael b'pat v'gamelach. So this became very much now the new stand. And the new stand is a remarkable thing. Remember that this was not simply a time of a gradual paradigm change in which Klal Yisrael came out of 70 years of Malchut Bavel with a completely new understanding of the place of the Beit HaMikdash in the scheme of things, the place of learning in the scheme of things, the relationship between Malchut and Torah, and all of the immense changes that took place, particularly in the ideas of Hashgacha, the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the presence of probability and randomness that has to do with Purim and the whole Takona of Purim, the new ways of creating rituals that would be able to allow people to live through these periods that the Adi Knesset HaGdolah were so involved in. It was much more rapid than that. And how do we know it's rapid? From the story of Yehoyachin himself. We just briefly touched on Yehoyachin. So Yehoyachin he didn't last very long, a couple of months, 3 months. And Nebuchadnezzar, again, for no reason that we can ascertain. Nobody got him. I mean, the Medrash says Nebuchadnezzar came back and they said, what'd you do? And he said, well, I appointed the other one. And he said, no, that wasn't what to do. He should have gotten rid of all of them. Comes back again a few months later, and for no reason at all that the Navi describes, he's finished with the Yehoyachin, puts Yerushalayim into siege, and Yehoyachin comes out. And even though Lamaisa, that brief period, Yehoyachin was defined as a terrible Rasha who did everything wrong. And in Yirmiyahu, we find that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, I don't care if that guy would be the Chosam HaYad Yamini. I would tear him to shreds. I would take him, throw him in a toilet bowl. This guy doesn't have a chance. He is Ariri. He's going to die with nothing, no children, nothing. In the end, of course, it's his grandson. So we have the Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel, who comes directly from the one that was going to be ripped off as if he was a Chotam Ayad Yemini. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says about his grandson, he's going to be the Chotam Ayad Yemini, which is obviously meant to be a play on what had been said originally about Yoyachin. But this happens within a couple of months. So he's brought to Bavel, and all of a sudden, the same Novi who's talking about how impossible he is saying how God's going to rebuild him and everything is great. Is that, what that means is that there was a tremendous shift. A tremendous shift that what we're seeing is an amazing face of it. That even little children who were part of all of this time of Yerida in Yehuda are able to stand on their own as teenagers, not worry about the king above, or do whatever the heck they want, and make takanas for the rabbim and so on and so forth. The question is, where do we trace that to? What was happening? What's fascinating is that if you take into consideration the history of the period, so when you're learning Melachim and you complete Melachim, your sense of Yoshio is, my God, what a failure. This is a man who was Marzer Kol Olam Kulo B'Tshuva, so to speak. He really thought he had it all worked out. They found the Megillah, and they found the Sefer Torah opened up to the Klola. He was the one that hides the Aron at the same time that he's going and preparing everybody for Tshuva. He's the one that gets everybody ready to go into Golas, but he's the one that's believing that he's really getting there. But the whole story, when he thinks we're on such a high Madriga, we're going to go, we're going to fight Pau Nechol just because he wants to pass through, all of those Midrashim that you remember from the close of Melachim. And you think it's a tragedy because the guy was not aware of how shallow the impact was of what he was doing, because nobody was really listening. There was, he was doing his thing and people were playing along. But the shift didn't take place. But remarkably, it's got to be, because, I mean, that's the only activity that we see going on during the period. It's got to be that what happens here is the sudden, as they say in modern Hebrew, Yorad Lehem HaSimon. All of a sudden, the things that had been happening during that period click. Yes, Simone always does go click like it's used. So the click came at this moment when they came to Bavel. In other words, the balance between in people's minds is so similar today, it's remarkable. So the balance of people's minds between, on the one hand, you know, who are these people to even dream that they could fight B'nai Yisrael? You know, a chutzpah. They're going to be over Bar Tzeno. What are these United Nations? What are they? A few hundred of the nations on earth? A bunch of idiots. Who cares? And so that was exactly the attitude. And on the other hand, you recognize that, well, you don't know what you're doing. You're totally defeated. There's no way you could possibly sustain this. It's exactly the same feeling. It's just as today people proceed as if it'll all work out somehow through some incredible miracle, not that anybody knows how that could be, but as everybody knows, you got to be crazy to live here and not believe in miracles. It's impossible. So that has nothing to do with whether you're religious, you're not religious. Maybe I don't believe in God, but he certainly does miracles for us. I mean, there's that sense of what the man in the street literally believes about simply being here. And that's exactly the contradictions. Should we do tshuva? Well, we should do tshuva, but we got along this long with that, and we can get along another 100 years. And then something can happen that instantaneously means all of the preparation is suddenly utilized. And this is what happened over here. There is just an absurd change between the carelessness, lackadaisical attitude to all of the inyanim, and now all of a sudden we're ready to be meiser nefesh for. It's like a crazy story. You find the same story, remarkably, is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu identifies, or Torah identifies in Yitzchak's understanding of who it is that Yaakov really represents. And that's Vayorach and Reach Bogdav, instead of Begadav, it's Chazal or Derech. So here you have a guy who's like, this of course is on a later Galut, at the time that the Romans are destroying Yerushalayim, right? So you have this guy, Yosef Mejida. He's completely irreligious, secular, thinks that the temple is a bunch of garbage. The Romans figure, okay, well, use this guy to break the Jewish pride. So they say to him, okay, you know what? You go into that temple. Anything you take out is yours. So he goes out and walks out with the menorah. So the Romans look at him, the menorah? No, I mean, let's be reasonable. Go in and walk out with something else. And at that moment, he realizes, even they think I'm crazy. So he says, no, that's okay, thanks. No, they said, no, that's your job. You're going, no, I'm not going back in there. Look, you're going to go back in there, buddy, or you're dead. I'm not going back in there. How about if we start shaving off little pieces of your body with a buzzsaw? You think you'd consider again? No. Go right ahead. And that's exactly what they do. They start cutting him with the little pieces. And all the time, says the Gemara, he's crying and crying. Now he doesn't even notice the buzzsaw. God. How could I have done that? Like, ad kidei kach, that I lost all sense of, like, what is holy, what is meaningful? And that's all that he could think about. So it's that instantaneous click that really happened over here. These were the same people that may be back home. We know nothing of what was going on at home. They're torn away from their culture, torn away from their families, kids that have no future, sitting over here in a dorm with God knows how many kids from all over the world, completely alone, speaking their own language. And now they are going to stand up, and they're not going to eat what the king personally, the king personally took interest in this. And we'll see later on, he personally changed the name. He had his eyes on Daniel the whole time. This is an unbelievable chutzpah. So that the idea of Yosef and the that we see over here, the way in which they're motzechein, which they just managed barely to get away with it, all of this, it's got very, very deep roots. So Vayomer Sarah Sarasim la Daniel. So good, it's true that it was Chesed and Rachamim with Cyrus, or it seems so. At least he didn't shoot him in the head right then and there. But he said to him, look, you know, I really like you, kid, and everything, but Yoreani et Adoni HaMelech. I mean, I'm a little bit nervous, quite frankly. Asher minat ma'achalchem et mishtechem. I mean, this was like a personal involvement. It was hu ba'atzmo. I mean, what am I supposed to do? Not recommend to the king or go along with this and then be discovered as being, as undermining his personal tzivu? You gotta be crazy. So you'll say, how will he find out? All the other kids your age, you're going to look great having eaten all of this wonderful stuff that Nebuchadnezzar has prepared for them. And then he's going to say, what happened with these kids? And then it's all going to come out, and then I'm dead. So I'd love to help, but really, I can't do anything for you. Enjoy the good food. Okay, so then they understood that he wasn't against what they, if he knew, as long as he could sort of save his own rear end, it was fine. Now the question was, how could they figure out a way which he was covered? Because he just wanted to cover him. Okay, so then, Vayomer Daniel el Hamelzar, Asher mina Saris Harsarisim, al Daniel Hanani Mishal Vazaya. This Sarasarisim had, of course, underling. That's always where to go to get things done. The only thing is, they recognized that they needed to make certain that the people on top were sufficiently elastic in their attitude that they would be able to get somewhere with the Melzar. Now, the Melzar was already open to bribery, as long as there wasn't anybody that was insisting that he do things differently. So they spoke to the Melzar that the Sarasarisim had appointed on the Neochanani Mishalva Azaria. Of course, he stands to gain a great deal from that, because after all, he can't return the food, and where's all this good food going to be going? He's got a big family, not a bad idea to have Nebuchadnezzar's finest wines and best foods on his table every day. So they tell him, look, Nasna et avadecha yamim asaran. Of course, this is in the Medrash. It's kenege the asaran nisyonot. You're talking about Nasna. Okay, we also come from a place where there are asaran nisyonot. Why don't you try us out? Let's do a little experiment. Yitnu lanu minazer unim. Why don't you just give us macrobiotic diet? We'll take raw seeds, nuts, and so on. That's what we'll eat. No wine. Umayim nishtel. We'll just drink water. What do you say about that? Now, you think that at the end of 10 days, obviously, we're going to look like a bunch of malnourished, poorly taken care of. You'll see. And then at the end of 10 days, you make a little meeting between us and the other kids, the ones that have been eating all of this good stuff, okay? And then compare our looks to Marei HaYiladim Ochlim Et Hatpag HaMelech. And then you decide what you want to do, okay? V'kasher tira, what you see, that's going to determine your opinion. Aseim Avadecha. That's what you do. So, it's okay. You can't lose that much. V'yishma lem l'davar hazeh. V'yinaseh yamim asara. And so for 10 days, takes it out. U'miktzat yamim asara. And indeed, here it's at the end of the 10 days. Nir amarehem tov uvriyeh basar. Min kol HaYiladim Ochlim Et Hatpag HaMelech. Miracle of miracles. Says the Yabin Ezra. What kind of miracle of miracles? Miracles? Are you crazy? Don't you know macrobiotic diets are much healthier than the garbage they were being fed? This is not miracle of miracles. This is just simple nutrition. But anyway, certainly most of them are Farshim viewing as miracle of miracles. They look better than anybody else who was eating all the stuff that the king had been sending them. So Vayam Meltzar, from that day on, the Meltzar would take all the good stuff home. So he was Noseet Patpagam V'yein Mishtehim V'noteilem Zeronim. In an exchange, he would go to Shuk and get some cheap chumas and stuff and give it over to them while he enjoyed the good food. Yeah, Yeladim Ha'ela are about Tam, and these four kids, Natan Lehem Ha'Elohim, Madav Ha'Asel, Bechol Sefer V'Chomah. God gave them insight into all types of knowledge, all types of writings, understandings, readings. And Daniel was given an additional thing in that he was mevin b'kol chazon v'chalomot. And so this Daniel was given even more than that, and he was given the ability, which was one to discover later, to have an insight into the subconscious and understand the way it was that people were thinking and what it was even that they were dreaming. The Gemara gives actual examples of that kind of thing at the time of the Gemara, of also kings who had one up on the roof another. What does it tell me what I dreamt? And the Gemara said, tell me what I'm going to dream tonight. And by suggestion, they managed to do that. Because they knew exactly what was really worrying him. And they spoke it out in a very graphic manner. And it's exactly what he dreamt of. So, in the end, at the end of that period that the king had given, which were the 3 years, at that point, the Saras HaRisim proudly presents Lefnei Nebuchadnezzar for the great Mivchan. These are now the interviews to see who's going to. It's very interesting. They actually do this in the United States. I know the way it's done because one of the people, there's like a small group of people that are advisors to the president, and they select, forgot how many people it is. This is Boozley, who's one of the members of the selection committee. It's like tremendous company. And they select exactly like this. They select for full scholarships and so on. Again, I don't remember how many years, but I wasn't thinking at the time. I should have asked more details. But they do exactly this, and they have this the president's council. He's got his own little group, and he is the one that decides on who it is that gets these stipends and is going to end up becoming important in the government. This is exactly what happened here. So the king actually gives them interviews. And besides whatever tests they were going to have, so that Vayedaber Itam HaMelech, and the Mefarshim point out, look, this was even without testing them. It was so evident from the personal interview that in just speaking with them, Velo Nimtza Mikulam, there wasn't anybody that was even in the same category as Daniel, Hanani, Mishael, Vazaria. And he personally selected them, Yamdu Lifnei HaMelech. And then, as time went on, some learned, or even after they got the test, after this, he selected them on the basis of personal interview. But the Chol Devar Chokmat Bina, Asher Bikesh Mi'an HaMelech, Vayim Tzeim Eser Yadot, Akol HaChartumim HaAshafim, Asher B'chol Malchuto. Anything that they were asked, they were able to respond with 10 times as much data and depth as all of these magical advisors, astrologers, that he had in his entire Malchut. And this is these two psukim, Chof and Chof Aleph, are essentially a look ahead, so that it goes all the way till the end of Daniel's career. Vayi Daniel Achnat Achat Lekoresh HaMelech. So that Daniel continued to be, Vayi means he continued to be in this state of tremendous Gedula in Babel until the first year of Koresh. Now, of course, it's a Machlokes in the Gemara, whether Hatach, the time of Esther, is called Daniel because Chatchu Migdulato, in which case you could possibly say that Vayi Daniel, meaning Bahavayato Heyeh, that he was still in this kind of good status, because he wasn't Chatchu Migdulato. If that's the case, this would have to mean Koresh first, because it was after that Chatchu Migdulato. If you hold, according to Rabban Yarmon, who says that he was called Hatach, that he was the most powerful person in the entire country, that means past the time of Koresh, Daryovish the first, Achashverosh, and then Daryovish, also known as Koresh the second, then it would mean actually, as Rashi points out, that this went all the way to the time of Koresh, who was now the offspring of Achashverosh, the actual builder of the Beit HaMikdash. In either event, the way that Chazal identified Daniel based on this is remarkable, because as in a very strange comparison, the Navi compares three people and says if they would all be together, Daniel, Noach, and Eov, would they be able to save the world? Very crazy. And Chazal point out that the only comparison between these three people is that they all lived in three totally different milieus, so that each one saw a paradigm destroyed, a period of reconstruction, and the old completely renewed. So they saw an Olam Banui, Charu, and Banui again. So that means that Daniel, who grew up in the Malchus with the Beit HaMikdash at times of glory, was torn from his parents and brought to Bavel before anybody else was there, all on his own. And then was one, according to the Medrash, when Koresh announced that anybody who wanted to is free to go to Yerushalayim and build the Beit HaMikdash, saw and lived to see the Yesod of the new Beit HaMikdash, he was essentially a Noah figure in which everything that once was had been totally lost, and he lived to see everything renewed in a totally different fashion. So that on the outside, there were similarities, but deep inside, he was a person who understood understood the flow of history in a way that gives a perspective that might be enough to save a world. And that's what the Navi is talking about. Could they save others? Could they save only themselves? So that these two psukim, Kol Dvar Chochma, over the course of time, indeed became clear. And that course of time takes us all the way till the end of this period, at which point Daniel was already 100 years old, if you consider the amount of time that must have passed. Even if he was at the time of the first Koresh, he must have been at least 85, a teenager. So that quite a long career he had.